episode 190 of the Cricket Her Weekly. We're back on the same continent as each other, Sid, which is very exciting. And so we are filming this in the conventional way. And there's been some very big news this week. Let's begin with the biggest of big news stories, which is that Meg Lanning has announced her retirement from international cricket. Now, the news broke on, late on Wednesday, our time, so I assume early on Thursday, Australia time. And yeah, it came in the form of a press release. She then did later do a media moment at the MCG. There's obviously been a huge amount of interest in this story because, let's be honest, it's Meg Lanning, one of the greatest female cricketers, one of the greatest cricketers that there has ever been and will ever be, and she has achieved so much in her career. Were you surprised, Sid?
I don't think that anyone that's been watching us talk about, you know, the ongoing saga of what's been happening with her, you know, her break and things, will be surprised, and we weren't surprised because, you know, I think that it seemed clear looking at it from the outside as we were that it was that international bubble thing that she didn't want to go back into. And, you know, that looks like where we're at. So she's going to carry on playing domestic cricket. And I think there's a good chance what we see is something a bit like what we've seen over the last few years with Sir Alastair Cook, where, you know, he retired from international cricket, left the bubble, but went and carried on playing for Essex, racked up loads of runs and was still a brilliant player. And I think there's a good chance we'll see Meg turning out for Victoria and in the WBBL. Perhaps not in overseas competitions, but we'll see. But I think that, you know, domestically we're going to see her for a while yet because she still loves her cricket and she still wants to play. She just doesn't want to be in that high-profile bubble.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because obviously we have previously said on previous episodes that we didn't particularly expect her to come back to international cricket. But all of the noise from Cricket Australia, from Alyssa Healy and other players has been that they did expect to see her back. I've actually got a quote from Sean Flegler from September that says, "Very hopeful she'll be back on deck at some point during the summer for Australia." And even like 3 weeks ago, she was being asked about, are you going to come back to international cricket? And she was saying, I feel I've still got that competitive edge and I love contributing to different teams. It just feels like that this has come as a little bit of a shock to some people, particularly to Cricket Australia. And that actually, they've made themselves a little bit of a hostage to fortune by very much presenting her return in WBBL as just the beginning rather than, let's see whether she's ready. So I feel that they maybe over-egged that pudding slightly, and that when we had previously said we think it's going to be very difficult for her to come back, there had been a lot of people poo-pooing that. But, you know, here we are. The big question, partly based on the timing, because we're now in a position where Alyssa Healy has an injured hand, is who's going to be the captain? And it's interesting because it very much has been presented as Healy kind of just temporarily holding the fort before Meg Lanning comes back. Well, actually, as we said, I think maybe even last week or the week before, there should have been better succession planning than there has been.
Yeah, there are a lot of people on social media going, it's really obvious who the next captain is going to be. It's definitely going to be.
And then the answers disagree.
Annabelle Sutherland. There are people saying that she goes straight to Phoebe Litchfield, even though she's like 12. Sorry, Phoebe, I know you're a little bit older than that.
There are obviously some people who are saying, well, of course, it's Alyssa Healy's job, and they're never going to take it away from her.
But it very explicitly isn't Alyssa Healy's job, although she has, I believe, this morning or last night put her hand up and said, I'd quite like the job, guys.
So. Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it? Because I wasn't 100% sure whether she was going to want it after all of the scrutiny that she faced during the summer with the Ashes.
And of course, the issue is that right now that the hand she put up is heavily bandaged after being attacked by her own dog.
Yes. Maybe she put up her other hand, I don't know. Anyway, we will just have to see. Obviously, Ash Gardner's name is in the mix, and of course Talia McGrath is the official vice captain, isn't she?
But the Talia McGrath thing is odd, isn't it? Because we know what the Australian selectors think about Talia McGrath's captaincy credentials. They don't think she's ready. If they thought she was ready, they would have made her captain
for the Ashes.
Definitely for the Pakistan trip to Australia.
Yeah.
So the selectors don't think that Tally McGrath is ready. If, I mean, they might appoint her and they might then go, oh yeah, well, we think that in the last 6 weeks she's just magically got ready. And, you know, maybe she'll be a great captain. But, they're not prepared.
No, absolutely. Anyway, we obviously wish Meg very much all the best.
Yeah, she's got a great future ahead of her. I think that she's going to be a very, very extremely successful whatever she does. I've got an inkling feeling that she's going to end up running a coffee shop empire. I mean, that's what she'll do with her life.
Okay.
I think that in 20 years' time, Meg Lanning will be the coffee shop millionaire of Australia.
They do love their coffee in Australia, don't they?
And Meg Lanning knows her coffee, so that's just what I think might happen. I think that she might leave cricket behind as a professional exercise, and I think that, you know, coffee is her thing, and I think that we could see her being a very successful businesswoman.
Well, I look forward to drinking a Lanning's latte next time we're in Australia.
Bonkers. Anyway, so Raf,
yes.
What will you remember Meg for in terms of, you know, on the field, in terms of her cricket, what will you remember?
Well, I think my favourite Meg Lanning memory is that, well, I mean, from an English perspective, it's probably nobody's favourite memory, but it's hard to look past that incredible T20 innings at Chelmsford in the 2019 Ashes series, when she just came over and smashed it all over the park and hit the record individual score in T20 cricket. It was a phenomenal performance. And I remember at the time just being absolutely flabbergasted and like, what has just happened? But what's interesting is I actually interviewed her and I actually interviewed her right before this whole story broke about her not being in the Ashes. So I think it's possible that I was the last journalist to do a proper feature interview with her before this thing happened, maybe. Because it was only like, 10 days before the announcement came out. And I think I talked about it previously on the Cricket Her Weekly. Anyway, we did a very wide-ranging interview, but one of the most striking things that she said was she talked about that innings. And she said, I don't know what happened myself. It just somehow clicked. And that she also said, I don't think I've batted that well since. It was a sort of once in a lifetime or once in a career performance. So I think it's got to be that innings that I'm going to remember. And the other thing I think about it is that it changed the way in which we kind of view women's T20 cricket. And specifically, it was also interesting because I was interviewing some other players for this particular piece and asked them about that Meg Lanning innings. And Nat Sivabrun actually said, it was the first time I'd seen Meg play in that way, and it got me rethinking my own T20 game. And now we know that since then, Nat has gone on and become probably now the best batter in the world, I think it's probably fair to say. And so actually you kind of think, well, that's almost Meg Lanning's legacy then, isn't it? That she's changed the way in which the top players in the world approach cricket, and I think that's really exciting.
Okay.
What about you, Sid? How are you going to remember Meg Lanning?
Well, I think oddly the thing that I'll remember Meg Lanning for mostly is the time that I mostly echo her name, which is Lanning's Law. Mm-hmm. So now, what's Lanning's Law for anyone that is unfamiliar with it? This was actually not even something directly said by Meg Lanning. It was said by her sister on the radio when her sister was doing radio commentary, and she said that this is something that Meg always says. And it is, it's not a good shot if it goes straight to a fielder. So often when you're watching cricket, you know, especially when you're watching on the television and you'll hear the commentators go, oh, great shot. And it's like, it's gone straight to a fielder. And then Sid will be there in the background going, Lanning's Law. It's not a good shot of it. And it tells you something about, you know, Meg's mentality.
Yeah.
She was very much about, you know, you can't just play your shots and look pretty. That wasn't what it was about for her. What it was about was scoring runs. And therefore, if it goes straight to a fielder, it's not a good shot. So remember it. It's not a good shot if it goes straight to a fielder. Lanning's Law.
Yeah, that's a great legacy. So Lanning's Law and Lanning's Lattes, what we have to look forward to in the future. Thank you very much, Meg Lanning, for everything you've given to cricket. And possibly to coffee. Sid, there has been other news this week, and it relates to England because we have a squad now,
we
have three squads, confusingly, and we've been trying to make sense of them. So they were announced, and we're recording this on Saturday, so they were announced yesterday on Friday. And yes, so we have an A squad, Because the A squad are going to play some T20 matches in India before the main squad arrive. Then we have a T20 squad, a main senior T20 squad, and then we have a test squad, because the senior England players are going to play three T20s followed by a test. That's what the tour looks like. So yes, there was an announcement, there was a John Lewis press conference, however, still no news on the contract situation, which is rather annoying.
They're keeping very much...
Because as we understand it, all of the players have known for like, what, 2-3 months. But can they announce it? No, they cannot. Anyway, let's leave that to one side. Let's talk about these multiplicity of squads, Sid.
Where should we start? Should we start with the A squad?
Because that's the, okay, the A squad. Okay, let's start with the A squad.
So we've got a big squad, like 20-odd players going to Amman for a training camp. It's basically the England players, that the kind of the contracted players that aren't in the WBBL, plus a load of other, mostly younger players. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of interesting things I want to pick out of that. We won't just go through it, but a couple of things to pick out. The first is the wicketkeeper situation. It looks like very much like Rhianna Southby's in line there.
It's really interesting, isn't it?
There is Saren Smale. She is in the squad as well. So there's, and you know, Smale obviously potentially has an edge with the bat there, but Southby is definitely the senior wicketkeeping option.
Come on the back of the 100, hasn't it? Because at the start of our 2023 season, Rhianna Southby couldn't even nail down her spot in the Vipers 11.
Yeah, no, and she was dropped by the Vipers during the Charlotte Edwards Cup. Nicole Fulton was preferred to her in that Vipers team. And now, you know, it looks like there's a very good chance that she's going to be playing in that England A team in India. So that's one thing I want to pick out. The other thing is there's one other interesting selection in there, which is ADR. So ADR's been selected. She's the only kind of senior player, older player in that squad, apart from the ones that, like Charlie Dean, that are just not at WBBL. So has she been selected because they think that she might be the captain rather than Scrivens? So we did talk about the fact that Scrivens is not really a T20 player. I still think you make Scrivens captain for these games because, you know, you need to give her that captaincy experience, but possible that they've got their eye on ADR as that senior player to play that captaincy role.
And anyone monitoring the Grace Scrivens klaxon will be having a great time right now.
Yep.
Okay, that's the A squad.
Now,
just interesting on the A squad, because John Lewis did speak a little bit about this in the press conference, and it does seem to be very much being treated as its own leg of the tour, doesn't it? Because I know that you were concerned that it was just going to be used as sort of warm up for the main games, but it is being treated kind of separately, and I'm not even sure that John Lewis is going to be present when the A games are taking place in India.
He might be hanging back in Amman with the kind of senior squad, and then, you know, leaving the kind of pathway coaches to take that A squad.
Yeah, so that's interesting. They are very much treating it as standalone.
Yeah, so
and also in terms of selections, he basically said, unless, you know, 3 or 4 of our players turn up injured from WBBL, we're not going to be transferring players from the A squad into these other squads, even if they do spectacularly well.
So, he also talked a little bit about Izzy Wong, didn't he?
What did he have to say about Izzy Wong? Well, Izzy Wong, who of course is not in either of the main squads, which there has been a little bit of chat about, obviously did have a very difficult summer. And it's interesting that John Lewis has finally actually kind of admitted that, or that the England setup have acknowledged that it's not just because she was having interference from coaches at regional and 100 level, which was the implication from something Heather Knight had said previously. So the exact quote from John Lewis is, "To push her straight back into an England jersey would be a mistake after what happened in the summer. I want to give her time to show us she's more certain about where she's going to land the ball. That A side is a really good way to do that." So he's saying that he doesn't think that she's ready at the moment for full international cricket, but the A Tour is another way to ease her back in a little bit and to kind of go, okay, we've been working really hard with you at Loughborough. Can you now bowl in a way that you're sure that you're not going to overstep or bowl a horrendous wide, I think, which is, you know,
or a full toss.
Basic level bowling number one.
Yeah.
But when you've had the summer that Izzy Wong had, unfortunately, you've got to go back to basics. So it'd be interesting to see how she gets on in the A Tour matches. Will we be able to watch those, Sid? Do we know the answer to that?
There's a good chance they might be streamed.
Okay, good.
Fingers crossed.
Right.
Okay,
so that's the A tour. Have you got points about the T20 and the
I've got points on everything. shall we talk about the T20 squad quickly? First, the T20 matches come first.
Yeah.
One interesting thing there, that's Cross has been kind of, has clearly dropped out of the reckoning for T20. So
that's interesting, isn't
it? She'll remain, obviously she's in the test squad. We'll see whether she plays in that test. But, you know, they've hung back with their younger bowlers for the T20s. Mm. They've obviously gone, you know, this is what we're going to be doing for India. They had already said that they're planning the T20 World Cup and the 50 over World Cup, both on the subcontinent. They're looking at playing three spinners potentially. So that means probably maybe even only one fast bowler. They've got Lauren Bell, Mahika Gurr, and then they've got Danny Gibson, Freya Kemp, and Nat Siver-Brunt. Obviously, two of them are currently injured, which kind of closes down their options a bit because Kemp's still not back bowling full pace. We understand, you know, she's working hard, but not quite there yet.
Okay.
So whether she bowls in India, that's definitely a big maybe.
Mm.
Nat Siver-Brunt still not bowling in WBBL. So
right, okay. Does restrict John Lewis's options there actually quite a bit.
Yeah, it does a little bit, but you know, England have kind of thrown all their ships behind these young bowlers, and they've basically gone, you know, we're going all out for the new generation. Mm. So that's one thing interesting from that squad.
Interesting, and this is the kind of return of Tash Farrant. Which squads is she in?
So she's only going to be part of the A squad at the moment.
Okay.
Again, the implication particularly of Tash Farrant is that she's still not really ready to play proper matches.
And right.
My guess is that she won't play in those A matches either.
Interesting.
And that was just reading between the lines, so that might turn out to be wrong. Maybe they're hoping they'll get her, that she'll turn out to be further down the track than they think she is, but I feel like the implication is that she's not going to be ready for those matches. And, you know, it's a long road back, but, you know, she's had this significant surgery, and, you know, ultimately the important thing is, you know, can she have another, you know, 7, 8, 9 years of career rather than, you know, will she play in India or not?
Yes.
That's the significant thing.
Absolutely. Okay. And then the tests.
There's interesting things there. I mean, one of the big questions the fans are going to be asking is Alice Capsey.
Yeah.
And, you know, the England press release made a big deal of this. And they were like,
yes.
Oh, Capsey in line for test debut. John Lewis got a big bucket of ice cold water and gave Alice Capsey the ice bath challenge.
I do remember that. That was an interesting thing. I feel like John Lewis and the person who writes the press releases need to actually get together and have a chat before the press releases are pushed out, because the messages are very much not aligning at the moment. As you say, in the press release it said Capsey in line for test debut. John Lewis was asked about it and he said, well, yeah, she might make her test debut, but we've got 14 good players in the squad who also might play. So he was very non-committal about it, actually, which I thought was interesting and perhaps implies that she isn't going to play, because, of course, she isn't an incumbent because she didn't play in the Ashes test.
Yeah, I think looking at the actual players, the actual names, you'd think Emma Lamb almost certainly plays, despite not being in any of the other squads. Oh, she's going on the Oman thing, but she's not in the T20 squad, which you'd expect. So I think Emma Lamb almost certainly plays. It's probably between Capsey and Dunks, to be honest. On form, you'd put Capsey in there, but you know, England have invested a lot of hope and in Dunks as a sort of, you know, a part of their, you know, all formats 11.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? As you say, Lamb in there because she's the kind of incumbent opener with Tammy Beaumont, but could be a bit radical. You could push Capsey up the order to open.
Yeah, or you could have Wyatt opening potentially.
Yeah.
I don't think they will, though. I think that Lamb is definitely a shoe in there, but I'm not sure that Capsey is. My feeling is that Capsey won't play in the test.
Because I was thinking that Capsey's bowling would actually be quite useful, but then of course Emma Lamb does also bowl off spin.
Yeah, I think that Capsey's perhaps a bit more of a sort of mainstream bowler these days.
Yeah, Emma Lamb's bowling seems to have been not really made anything of by England somehow. It's an interesting one, isn't it?
Mark Robinson once said to me that he saw her as an off spinner who could bat a bit rather than the other way around, but these days
we need to get Mark Robinson and John Lewis in a room to fight it out, Sid. Okay, the other really interesting thing that John Lewis did say in the press conference, which unfortunately I couldn't attend, but I did listen back to later, was about coaches. So this is a little bit of an aside from the conversation around the squads, but I was just listening to it. I just got the slight impression that he may possibly have tuned into recent episodes of the Cricket Her Weekly, Sid.
Hi, John.
I don't know, I could be mistaken, of course. But there was an element of actually, because obviously there was another coaching announcement this week. He's assembled another coach and he's brought in somebody else who does actually have a little bit of pedigree working in women's cricket as an assistant coach. But he was kind of asked about the coaching team that he's assembling. And it felt to me like he was a little bit on the defensive about this, in a way that he might well have been if he had listened to our conversation last week on the Cricket Her Weekly, where we basically said it's not great practice to keep bringing in people for these senior jobs who have never worked in women's cricket. So here's what he had to say. The budgets that are available in regional cricket are quite small at the moment, and that means that the coaching available is restricted in terms of time on task. You'll see one or two coaches at a region trying to deliver a lot of work over 10 or 15 or 20 players. They're very stretched. By me adding in some good quality coaches with the England squad, that gives us more resources to help women's cricket grow and develop. So, first of all, he's criticising the regional, the funding of the regional system, which is interesting because who controls the budgets for the regional system? Oh, it's the ECB. Anyway. So he's saying that he doesn't think that the coaching at the regions, he's not criticising the coaches, but he's saying that they don't get enough time to work with the players. So effectively what he's saying is, oh, well, it's okay for me to bring in people who haven't had those opportunities at regional cricket because I'm giving back into the system of women's cricket and I'm making it so that everybody wins because I'm developing these coaches. So I just thought that was quite interesting.
Okay.
Anyway, if you are watching, hi, John. Finally, this week, Sid, and I hesitate to end on a downbeat note, which we often seem to do on the Cricket Her Weekly, but unfortunately, the ICC exists, and so therefore sometimes we do have to end on a downbeat note. Now, what's happened this week? Well, listeners and viewers may well be aware. On Thursday, Jeff Allardyce, the ICC CEO, gave an interview with Alison Mitchell on BBC Stumped, where he talked about the ongoing situation in Afghanistan. This is partly in the news because Afghanistan men's team have apparently had a good Men's World Cup. There's this ongoing question of why are the ICC still giving funding to Afghanistan Cricket Board when they're patently not doing anything to develop women's cricket. You listened to this, Sid. Do you want to just give a very brief summary of Jeff Allardyce's position on this?
Yeah, I mean, his position was essentially, you know, this comes down to decisions taken by the Afghan government. There's nothing we can do about the Afghan government. You know, we just give the money to the Afghan Cricket Board and, you know, they have to decide what to do with it. So it's out of our hands. Sorry, guys, it's the Afghan government. Yeah. Have made these decisions.
ICC are powerless.
Yeah.
Now, that was Thursday. Now, Friday. Friday, Sid, ICC announced they're suspending Sri Lanka cricket from membership of the ICC due to government interference. The government interference is a quote. So, on the one hand, we have an international governing body who say that they cannot possibly get involved in the affairs of a national cricket board, because that is not their remit. On the other hand, we have an international cricket governing body who say it's imperative for us to get involved in the workings of a national cricket board. So which is it? Which is it? Now, we have two options here, Sid. Either, because obviously, you know, the ICC are against government interference in cricket, right? Because they've suspended Sri Lanka cricket for that reason, okay? So we have two options. Either they believe that the Taliban are not interfering in cricket in Afghanistan. Okay, that's a view, that's a position. It's a ridiculous one, but it is a position. Okay, in which case, it's the Afghanistan Cricket Board who can't be arsed with women's cricket, okay? And so you're giving these people this money when you know that they are misogynists, okay? Or they know that the Taliban are interfering in the administration of cricket. And let's be honest, they do know that, okay? But they're not doing anything to stop it in the way that they are in Sri Lanka. So the whole organisation of the ICC is just completely corrupt and double standards across everything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, fundamentally, that's right, of course. I mean, I think that the mistake that potentially we're all making here, and lots of people tweeted about this, thought Cathy Whitney tweeted about it as well. I think the mistake that potentially we're making collectively is to treat what Jeff Allardyce is saying in good faith. I think that honestly, he knows he's talking nonsense. All he's trying to do is get through the next day, get through the next week. His job is just to, you know, put the position of the ICC, whatever the ICC's position is. The ICC is very much driven by, you know, politics, and particularly politics in some of its major boards. I remember a game what Cindy Butts says that John Major said to her before she embarked on the ISEC, you know, commission report. John Major apparently said to her, "Cindy, you'll find that there's more politics in cricket than there is in politics." And, you know, that's what we're seeing here. And, you know, we should no more believe Jeff Allardyce's reasoning and arguments than we should believe Mickey Mouse's reasoning and arguments, honestly. You know, just there's no point in treating it in good faith. So yes, it's inconsistent, but that's his job, is just to say whatever he can say to get through to the end of the interview. Because at the end of the day, the ICC's priorities are clearly not any kind of sort of consistent actual governance. The ICC doesn't exist to govern; it exists to parrot whatever they're told to parrot by key member boards, several of which are driven by political situations in their home countries. That's all there is to say about it. It's just really disappointing. And I repeat again, the ECB should withdraw from the ICC. That's what they should do.
Yeah, and Cricket Australia.
Yeah.
Those two boards are in a powerful position to be able to do that.
They're the only ones
that have the finances to be able to do that, and to be able to function independently of the ICC. What about it? We're throwing down the gauntlet again.
Right.
Well, sorry to end on a negative note, but hey, that's cricket. And we will see you in a week's time. Bye-bye.
Bye.